Welcome to Improv Interviews with Margot Escott, a psychotherapist in Naples, Florida, who is using her 35 years of experience to develop improvisation programs, benefiting and improving the lives of those with emotional and physical challenges. Improv Interviews brings together the world's leading improvisational theater masters, founders, and innovators who are using improvisation therapeutically in unique and surprising ways. With great guests that include legends like Ed Asner and Aretha Sills, you're sure to learn something new about improvisation. This is Improv Interviews with your host, Margot Escott.
Hi out there, my listeners for Improv Interview. Today I have a magnificent guest that I ran into at a sketch writer's workshop recently. And I'm so happy to have this wonderful actor, improviser, writer, director, film and TV personality, Miss Jillian Bellinger. Hi, Jillian.
Hi. Hi, how are you, Margot?
I am great. And currently, she is the owner and co-founder of the Misfit Theater in Asheville, North Carolina. So we really want to talk about your leap from LA to North Carolina. What's this transition been like for you, Jillian?
Yeah, so great question. Yep. So just for those folks who might not know me, my name is Jillian Bellinger. I'm the artistic director of Misfit Improv. I also am the owner. And the word co-founder is funny. I guess you could say my husband is technically part of it. And yeah, it's pretty much my baby. So we also have a school coordinator. Marlene Thompson is our school coordinator. And we've got faculty that are helping support us as well, like Joe Carroll and Casey Gullickson is also on faculty. How did this transition start? So I was in LA for 13 years and then the pandemic hit and it really just sort of changed the way things were happening in LA. I mean, it changed the way things were happening everywhere, certainly in LA though. And a lot of theaters struggled, you know, Second City closed down / moved to New York, however you want to think about it. UCB also closed one of their facilities. IO was actually pre-pandemic, but they were no longer there, right? So the landscape of LA was changing in terms of improv. There's still a lot of improv in LA, and it was just becoming different. We had also been there a long time. My husband had been there 20 years, and I was sort of faced with the mortality, not that this is a mystery, but the mortality of my parents, right? And really starting to feel a desire to be closer to them. So they are here half the year in Asheville and half the year in Texas. And my husband was ready to get out of LA. We were definitely stuck in a pattern, a rut. Like there are places that there was a great ease to playing and being a part of, like West Side Comedy Theater in Santa Monica, certainly Second City Hollywood, although that had left. And we just were ready for growth. And the other benefit was we would see my parents regularly. My husband's mother also lives in Virginia, so we would be closer to her as well. So we also just thought about impact, right? LA wasn't going to miss us if we left. We definitely had the possibility of having a deeper impact in North Carolina, and that was important to both of us, that we be of service to the communities that we were in. And that was really the driving force of that change.
That's great. Now, one of your missions, I think, is to create community and to make theater and improv available to all people.
Yep.
Not just a niche, you know, performing at whatever, but I really admire that about you. And is your husband an improviser actor as well?
Great question. He absolutely is not. So it's funny, in many ways, improv has given me so many things, right? Which is true for most improvisers. It's certainly defined my adult life, my performance experience, my educational experience, my time. It's the thing that I've given the most time to. And it also gave me my husband, really by accident. He came to see another improviser, Allison Royer, who's a Chicago improviser that lives in LA now. And he came to see her in a show, and I was in the show after. And it was just truly an accident. I mean, or fate, however you wish to define it for yourself. He is not an improviser, though, and doesn't even love to watch it, honestly. We're very selective about which shows he comes to. He took an improv class once from me when I was guest teaching in Hawaii. And he was actually pretty good at it. He's seen enough of it to understand. We got to the end of the class, though, and I said, well, what did you think? Do you want to do it? And he was like, absolutely not. It was not my, I did not, it was not for me. And that's fine, right? We each have our own sort of autonomous things that are our things. And at the same time, he's super supportive.
That is wonderful. And he really helped you getting your theater together?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're definitely very autonomous, I would say. So he helps me with heavy lifting. So like he built the curtains that are in our space to kind of simulate a stage. He helps me do all of the, like, he helped me change out the lights in the space, you know, that kind of stuff that I could find someone to do. And so what he does is he's a project manager for residential home building. So he has a lot of construction background. I mean, that's what he does for a living. So anything that sort of lives in that camp, he definitely gets a phone call. And, you know, he isn't part of the day-to-day.
Got it. Well, I'm going to have a link in the text with our podcast to your theater, because your theater is just beautiful. Your space is wonderful. It looks like you have great classes. I see there's somebody playing keyboards that you have. Do you have a musical director?
Yes, so we do have a music director. So we have Music Improv 1 and 2 and a Music Improv Performance Ensemble. And we work with a music director named Steve Sinsenig, and he is excellent, and was most recently part of the orchestra for Wicked, the Wicked Southern Tour of Wicked. And he used to do music direction for Norwegian cruises. I think it was Norwegian. Might have been Carnival. Don't quote me on the cruise line. Anyway, that's what he did for a long time, was did the arrangements for Broadway, for the Broadway shows on the cruise ships. And really talented musician himself, really understands music improv, just really a gifted music director.
Oh, I want to come visit you and take a week of musical improv. You need to have like intensive week long.
I know.
So great. And you have wonderful teachers. Joe Carroll is a great teacher.
Great teacher. So,
oh my gosh, that is just wonderful. And I really understand about wanting to be close to your parents, although I made my move 40 years ago here to Naples, Florida. But I'm just so addicted to improv. And when was your very first improv class, Jillian?
Yeah, so 2002 is the answer to that question, sort of. So I don't know if folks will remember, but once upon a time, Backstage was like an actual hard copy newspaper that you used to pick up. And in the back were auditions. And there was an audition notice for a local improv company called Stevie Ray's Comedy Cabaret. And they were doing auditions. And so I went, and I don't think I was any good, but I do think that I was young and had a bunch of energy and sort of a willingness or a desire. It was very clear that I wanted to do well and learn, and they were kind enough to bring me into that ensemble. So I didn't really sign up for a class initially. What happened was I had a theater degree, and I got put into this improv ensemble. So I was learning on the fly while we were doing shows.
Wow.
That being said, it's not a way I would recommend. There were things I didn't understand, and I don't know that it necessarily set me up for the most success, because I was having to put pieces together while I was also performing. And that's like two software running at once. So I made it harder for myself. I think I would have made it a lot easier for myself if I'd just gone and taken classes, right? That the bravado of being 23, though, is that you think, well, I have a theater degree. Like, how could I possibly need a class? And my answer to that now is everyone needs a class. Improv is a practice. It's not a skill that we take one class and we're done learning. So
Right.
anytime anyone asks me, like, can I skip level one? My answer is no. Because it's like yoga, right? The class doesn't change, but we do. So the way we come to improv is what changes. So we could play the same, and I have the same games a million times, and the game doesn't change. The way that I approach the game changes,
Right.
right? I didn't get that though. And I understand that people all the time, email me. I took two classes a year ago. Great. I love it. You've got some hours. And just thinking about like that yoga analogy, like how much more deeply can I get into the pose? Well, how much more deeply can I get into blind line or new toys or whatever the game is?
So when you were at, was this in Minnesota, Stevie Ray's? This was
That's right. And it still is, still exists, and they're still rocking shows. And actually, they're at the Chan Hassen Dinner Theater is where they are.
Wow. Now, that's where you went to school in Minnesota. That's
That's
what you
right.
did from there. But you're originally from Texas, like a lot of great people we know, Rich Baker,
That's true.
Landon Kerksey,
That's true.
a lot of wonderful people from Texas. What part of Texas, where were you in Texas geographically?
Yeah, so I'm in Waco, or was in Waco. My parents are still in Waco, and it's about 2 hours south of Dallas, or an hour and a half north of Austin, or
Wait,
wherever you live.
I know where Waco is, certainly on the map. So I've got to ask you, were you living there when they had all that stuff
Cult?
going on at the
Yeah.
compound?
Yes, the cult. Yes, I was there indeed. So it's interesting. People know Waco for two reasons. One is the cult, or the other is Chip and Joanna Gaines from HGTV, who have redefined Waco. And now we get bunches and bunches of tourists, which is really funny to me. Anyway, it's funny. And yes, I was there. What I will say is Waco was the closest town to where the Branch Davidians were. And so it wasn't really like in the city center, it was out in the country. Like you had to drive, like an hour
Right.
to get there. But I did see it. I think we saw it actually before it burned. And then I had an old boyfriend who wanted to visit it once when we were visiting my parents. And so we went out there. And honestly, it was just really sad. It was so tragic. Like they have a memorial wall of everyone that died. And I just hadn't processed all of it. So I was there. It was up on the TV screens. I think I was in sixth grade when I don't know what the right word is, but when they stormed it. And the great debacle occurred. It was a big mess.
Yeah,
So yeah.
I watched all the movies about it and the
Yeah.
view of the FBI and the CIA and all that
ATF, yep.
horrible stuff that happened. Yeah, so you were pretty young still. Now, did you live in the city of Waco or were you in a suburb? What was your environment like?
Yeah, so Waco, at least when I lived there, it's bigger now, but it was about 100,000. And so suburbs, there are suburbs, but they're not maybe traditionally the way we would think of a suburb if we were in Chicago or LA. So I lived in one called Woodway, but literally you drove 5 minutes and you were in Waco proper. So yeah, I lived in Woodway. My parents still live in Woodway.
And tell me about your family. Do you have siblings? Tell me about them.
I do have a sibling. His name is Chip, and he lives in Waco still, also a suburb. And his kids still go to the same school district that he and I both went to. He married someone who was a year younger than me, so he's definitely living like a hometown life. He went to Baylor, which is in Waco. My dad
Right.
taught at Baylor. My mom taught at Baylor. His wife went to Baylor. So real Texas, Baylor, Waco party.
And what did your parents teach?
My dad was chair of the religion department at Baylor for a long time. And then my mother taught the sociology of aging. So she's a gerontologist. She didn't do
Wow.
that full time, though. She was the associate director of Central Texas Senior Ministries, which is a really long title for Meals on Wheels. She supported Meals on Wheels for 30 years.
So you grew up in a socially conscious environment then,
I would
didn't
say,
you?
yeah, I would say that's true, that my parents were very connected to the idea of service and that our purpose here is to be of service to people.
And is as a head of religion or teaching religion, was your father a religious person? Was there religion in your home growing up, like Wednesday night church or anything like that?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So both my parents are ordained ministers, so they're both reverend doctors, technically. My dad has a PhD from Cambridge, and then my mom has a doctorate of ministry. And they, so my dad is a Old Testament theologian. That's really what he does.
Wow.
And so I did grow up in a church called Lakeshore. It's an interesting, a bit of a oxymoron because it's actually a progressive Baptist church, which some people are like, that's not a thing. It is. And it, there just aren't that many of us. So we're not a loud enough majority to be heard or even a loud enough minority to be heard. And so, yeah, I grew up super involved in church. So we went Sunday mornings, we went Sunday nights for youth group. And then we also went Wednesday nights for like fellowship, I guess is what a lot of churches would call it. That has since changed. Like that community has gotten a lot smaller. And so it's just a different community than it was, but it's still where my parents go to church. I would say for myself, I don't subscribe to particular organized religious beliefs, and they're fine with that.
That's, you know, great. Yeah, I believe in a spirituality, not a religion. That
sure.
There's like a power greater than ourselves operating in the universe. So that's kind of my jam on that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really conservative because your parents were socially active and.
Yeah. And it is a welcoming and affirming community, which if people aren't familiar with that terminology, it means that we are a space that's open to LGBTQIA plus folks, which is highly unusual, usually
yeah,
for
sure
a Baptist
yeah.
community.
Sure.
So that's just sort of an example of the progressiveness of that church. That being said, it's all relative, right? So when I grew up thinking it was very progressive. Now that I have lived outside of Waco longer than I did live there, when I go back, I'm like, oh, this is real religion-y. So I think it just depends on perspective, which is most things, right? It's all relative to where you're standing in a moment, how you sort of perceive or think about it.
Right. So do you remember, because I do, the first movie or full-length animated cartoon you ever saw?
Yes, the first I do. It was a trauma-inducing cartoon version of Little Mermaid, but it was like, I think it's a Grimm's fairy tale, I think,
uh-huh.
or Hans Christian Andersen maybe, but maybe
yeah.
It's Hans Christian Andersen. Anyway,
yes, it is, yeah.
In the real story, she doesn't get married to Prince Eric. She becomes the froth on the waves. Like she ends up having to like die essentially. Cause it was like she either had to kill the prince or kill herself. And she doesn't escape the choice. So she becomes the froth.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, those Grimms and those
animated cartoon.
Yeah. So it was an animated cartoon of the real Hans Christian Andersen story.
Wow.
And I remember being devastated. And also,
how old do you think?
I think I was around 3. And I remember it was the first movie that made me cry, too. Maybe, I think I was just sort of becoming aware of being affected by media. But I remember crying, which
yeah.
is, yeah. And I remember it being really sad and very confused, too. Like, why? Why does this happen? Which is not a question I've gotten rid of in terms of humanity.
Wow. That's so different from my experience, which was, because this is about me, of course.
Yeah, go.
It was the Hans Christian Andersen story with Danny Kaye. This is like decades ago.
Sure.
And he was singing and dancing.
Yeah.
He invited the children to sing and dance. And I was 3 or 4 and I got out of the seat. And I was dancing in the aisle and singing until an usher put me back in my seat.
Oh.
But how about the first either cartoon or movie that you really loved that inspired you?
I think as a child, I didn't necessarily like have a concept of like what the world at large could be necessarily. And so I would say that I used media as a form of comfort. And maybe like this is, I mean, I know lots of kids do this. I don't know what it looks like now because streaming is so different. But, you know, back in the day when I was a kid, we had VHS. And so, and for the longest time, we didn't have cable. And so I would just play the same VHS tapes on repeat. And they were Sword in the Stone, Disney's Sword in the Stone. Still a fan of it. Still think it's a great, charming movie. Crocodile Dundee.
I always love that subway scene.
Yeah, where they yell back and forth, of course. It's a great movie. It's still a great movie. I watched it not that long ago. It's still a good movie. And then Ghostbusters 2, not 1, but 2. Dirty Dancing. And I think that was it. So like, oh, and eventually Wayne's World. I don't think that hit until junior high. But we would watch those on repeat, right? Like, I knew every line. It didn't matter that I'd seen it before. That was just always what we put on after we got home. And it was a rotation of those kind of 5 movies.
That's great. Now, since you didn't have cable, did your family watch TV shows together? Like, oh, maybe you're too young for the Carol Burnett show. It was a great family show. But did you do that as a family at all?
Not really. Not that I can remember. I mean, I would say my family definitely watches TV, and it changed, right? So we didn't have cable for the longest time. And then eventually we also didn't have a VCR for the longest time. Then I think we got the VCR first. Then I think we got the cable. But I don't really remember watching a lot of TV with my parents. And maybe that's because TV watching happened after we went to bed. That's my guess. Yeah. I don't know. But we watch TV together now, for sure.
So when did you think you might like to act or sing or do something theatrical? How old do you think that you were then?
I mean, I always liked it. I always did it. So there were like summer enrichment programs in Waco at Baylor that I did, and I always did the theater stuff. And then once I got into high school, I lettered in drama.
What?
Yep, nothing like a letter jacket with a.
Oh my god! Still have it?
Badge. I do think I got rid of it. Oh. Yeah, and it wouldn't fit me anymore.
Were you ever in musicals?
So it's interesting. The high school that I went to, there was like a kind of a hard distinction between choir kids and drama kids, and the musicals were mostly choir kids. So I did not do musicals until I went to college. I did a couple. I do love to sing, but I wouldn't say I'm a kick-ass singer necessarily. So I do music improv, which, you know, you can get away with away with a lot more vocally. And so I don't think that I knew. I'm not even still sure, actually. But I certainly didn't know how acting could be a job until really college. I went to a place called the National Theater Institute for a semester.
Very fancy, Julia.
It is very fancy. Thank you. And they really sort of created a bit more of a vision about how acting, theater, performance can be a job. Even there, though, it was pretty limited. So their sort of vision was a real East Coast theater perspective of like drama. You're on a stage, maybe you go into rep, summer stock, that kind of stuff, which never spoke to me. I mean, I entertained it because I thought that's what the plan was, but there was never really any clarity around how to make a living as a performer. Then when I got into improv, I fell in love with it in Minneapolis, and I sought out folks who were more informed than I was and said, "What, I love this. What should I do? Where should I go?" And they said Chicago. So that's where I went. And that also, there is a path to being a professional improviser, but it's limited, right? There's only so many spots for so many people. And I don't know, you know, Second City is a feeder for Second City. It doesn't have a depth of like, what can the world look like? And really, by accident, I got into corporate improv training, which is how, in many ways, I've made much of my living as an improviser, is as either a corporate entertainer or a corporate trainer. And then not until I was in LA did I go on tour with the Mission Improbable Ensemble doing a show called Shot of Reality, which was an alcohol awareness show. And then we also did Nerdology, which was a college trivia show. So I did some of that.
I love Mission Improbable. That's wonderful. Great, great people in that cast.
That's true. Yep. Westside, which is Mission Improbable's theater in LA, is a great theater. They have built an incredible community and they give a lot to improvisers.
So I had a question, but maybe more of a statement. You're an incredible comedian. You are so, I think you're naturally funny. Were you funny as a kid? Were you a class clown ever? Or tell me about that.
So I think that I am, like, I lean comedic for sure. Although, if I'm not in a performance environment, you might not know it. So I think I tend, like, in regular life, to read as a bit serious. But then if you get to know me, you know, I'm the one making snarky comments at the back of the room. So yes and no, right? I certainly have a side of me that's very type A, very focused, very tries to be relatively intentional with my communication. And then I have this other side of me that's very comedic. So it depends on who I'm with. If I'm with my family, if I'm with my husband, if I'm with other improvisers that are not my students, but my peers, very comedic. If I am in a professional setting, my serious turns on.
So when you got to Second City, and do you remember who some of your teachers were back then?
Yeah. Well, it was interesting. It was very male dominated in terms of teachers when I was there. I actually think my first teacher, if I remember correctly, and maybe she was my first con teacher, was Bina Martin. And I think she may have been the only female teacher I had the whole time. Ann Libra was also a teacher, but I never had her. So, and I'm talking specifically Second City. But then I had Gelman, and I had Tim O'Malley, and I had Norm Holly, and I had Norm Holly multiple times for my conservatory. And that was pretty much it. I think maybe I had John Hildreth once. Yeah, and I did more than one program. Oh, I did have Mary Scruggs for sketch writing.
Wow.
And so Mary has passed away, and was a lovely, incredible, and encouraging teacher, and I loved her. I love taking class with her, and I love John Hildreth too.
He's wonderful, and I love Gelman. I love his little book. I always refer to people. I think it's tremendous. Was ETC going on when you were there?
Yep. So ETC was there. Yep, and Main Stage was there. Cruise ships were, and Torco. So those were kind of the four outlets that were there when I was there.
Okay. And did you have a day job while you were studying at Second City? And if so, what was it?
Yeah, I mean, yes. So I was playing Comedy Sports Chicago. So I was teaching for them and then also doing some corporate, which was great. That did help supplement for a period of time. And then I stopped doing Comedy Sports Chicago. And honestly, Margo, I don't even remember. It was like so catch as catch can. I worked briefly for like a dating service, not as a date, but like admin called. No, I can't even remember what it was called. Great Expectations. But it was like pre-app, pre-dating, online dating app. It was like you went, you paid a lot of money, you had those videos made of yourself and photos, and then people would come in and look at books of people to date. It was real old school. And then I was a Segway tour guide for a while, which another improviser set me up with that gig, Deanna Moffitt.
Wow, that must have been fun in Chicago, huh?
It was cool. I mean, I think being outside and being a tour guide is not an easy road for anyone. It's a lot of energy. And I'm sure that just thinking about transferable skills, I'm sure that it helped me understand, like, how do I organize people? How do I get people to move around? How do I convey information? How do I keep up patter and charm when it's boring? Like, all of those are skills tour guides have to use constantly. So yeah, and I'm sure there was other stuff in there that I can't even think of.
So you're at Second City, and how long were you there before you went to either IO or the Annoyance?
I think I did them concurrently, but I did. So I did music improv at Second City. I did improv for the act.
Who was the music improviser then?
Mike Dakota.
Oh, yep. I love Mike. Isn't he great?
He is great. And then I did, I also did improv for the actor program. I did conservatory, and I did a writing intensive with Mary, where it was like the first three levels kind of squished into one for writing. Then I did the full program at Annoyance. And I don't remember when I put them, it was so long ago. I mean, it was
it was how
years
long?
Ago, 14 years ago.
Who did you study with at Annoyance?
Mark, both of the Sones, Rebecca and Rich, Mick Napier.
Yeah, he's one of my heroes. His book opened my eyes.
Yep. I read that. It's a great book. I recommend it to students as well. I feel like I'm forgetting someone, but I don't know who they are.
So you're bit with the improv bug, right?
Yes.
But you also like acting still, don't you?
I do. Yeah. So, you know, if I had had my druthers, I would have been like the comedic relief on a sci-fi comedy series. Like if Galaxy Quest had been a TV show, that really would have been my dream job. Is to just be the pithy alien at the back of the room that says snarky things. So I have done a little bit of TV and I have done commercial.
Quite a bit. You've got a long list on IMDb.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. So yeah, I still always did that as well. And I still audition. I still have my agent in LA and I have an agent in Raleigh. So I audition when it comes, which you just, if you're about to leave town, the rule is that's when you'll get an audition. So I should make more travel plans.
So tell me more about your writing. Did you write as a kid? Was that something you enjoyed doing?
So I would say no. I don't generally have the patience for it. That being said, I have written three musicals. Mostly because I love to be in musicals, but
right.
I'm not a good enough singer to be like cast in a touring company or something like that for a musical.
But you're not going to be in Wicked anytime soon.
I'm not going to be in Wicked. I can't hit those high notes or sustain the notes either. Yeah, I mean, that would be so fun. And also just not, my body wasn't built for it, I guess. I don't know. Nonetheless, all of those were built, you know, from a desire to be in something. And also I would say Trump in Space, which was one of the musicals that I wrote with Landon Kirksey, another Texan, and played at Second City Hollywood for a really long time. That was also written in response to Trump getting elected to office sort of not knowing, just having a deep grief around that and not really, and sort of needing to bring some levity to that situation, which may or may not repeat itself.
And didn't you write for a Second City, was it a Second City Live or something?
Like a sketch show? Yeah, in Hollywood when I first, Yeah, when I first got there. You know, it's interesting. So, I mean, you and I know each other just from being in the community, and we're also in a sketch class together. I don't love sketch, which is probably odd for a comedian to say, but I don't love it. I also don't love watching stand up, although I have done stand up. There was a period where I did stand up. And part of what I dislike about it is the writing. I just have a really hard time getting myself to sit there and do it unless I feel like it matters somehow. And I know plenty of writers. Like I know like Alrynthia Carter is an excellent writer, and she or like Carla Kakowski, like they're so good at keeping the commitment to themselves of writing, whether they have a show coming up or not, or whether it matters, they do the writing. And I would love to be that way, but I just am not. And so I've tried to trust my instincts and just say, well, I'm going to follow the fun. And I'm just going to be honest with myself about it. I'm doing the sketch writing class because I run a school and I need to be informed about what writing means to other people, about structure, about, you know, if a teacher comes in and wants to teach sketch, do we have the same language?
And Mark is so much fun and such a wonderful person. I got to meet him when I was in LA. It was the best week of my life. I would love to be able to get up in the morning, have the coffee, and start writing right away, which is what they say to do. I've got all these books on writing, but the discipline is something I lack because I like to play too much. Did you ever study The Groundlings? I forget.
I did. I went through, so I started at Groundlings right before the pandemic. Then the pandemic hit and kind of put everything on pause, which was a bummer. I did some of their online character stuff during the pandemic as well. And then once they came back to in person, I came back to it. So I got through advanced and then we moved. It is just a really long program. No judgment around that. It's just long. So I didn't have time to finish it, which was a bummer, but you know.
I mentioned Jane Morse earlier, and when I was talking with her and Jeff happened to be in the room, they were talking about how they don't believe in levels. They just want to teach and not have this, have to do this before you can do that. Now you have to have basics and everything, but I really like their free-spirited approach to that.
Well, and that's the thing, right? So it sort of goes back to that idea that improv is a practice, right? Like we can have a focus, and really, it's just a practice. The reason we do levels is because that's what consumers want. They want to know what's the next thing I take? What's the next thing I take? And so we do it for ease of sign up, really.
That's right.
And we distinguish between short and long form.
Exactly. And that's an important distinction. I love both forms. Do you have a
Me too.
favorite yourself?
No, I really love both of them. TJ and Dave were here recently and sort of they gave a workshop and a show, and they talked about the kind of improv they do, specifically their style. And you know, they get 45 minutes for a two person. Most of us don't get that kind of time. Like that's like an immense luxury, right? So one of the questions I asked was, what you're talking about, the kind and style of improv you're talking about is dependent on time. But most of us don't have that luxury. What about those of us that play short form? And I thought their answer was interesting. And Dave said, well, it's a different job description. The job description of short form is a different job description than long form. And I thought, yeah, that's fair, right? That short form is very much about the audience. It's about the mechanism of the game, which really is just what's the tool of heightening, right? The mechanism just builds the heightening. And then it's about being fast, right? We only have 2 to 3 minutes, whereas long form is just different. So different job descriptions, which I just thought was a good
Yeah,
way
I
of
love
thinking
that.
about it.
And they are so brilliant. I love watching them. I've never seen them live, but I love
They're
watching
great.
them. And Dave is such a fantastic actor as well. I mean, really, just terrific. Starstruck. I ran into him once. One of the few times I was at Second City Chicago. I was standing next to him in line. I didn't know who he was. And a friend of mine, Stephanie, said, "Oh, that's Dave Pasquese." And I said, "Oh, it is." Would you like to be on my podcast?
I mean, fair enough, right?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about during the pandemic because I seem to recall our mutual friend Jay Suko, who
True.
is such a fabulous, giving, generous person. I seem to recall doing something with you online where
It's true.
you were using all the chat, the different, is it called the GIFs or the different chat GPI faces?
Oh yeah, I was using a bunch of filters.
And you did it so fast. I was in awe. I'd never used them before. You were so much fun. That stood out in my mind. I still can see some of those faces. It's wonderful.
Snap camera, that's what it's called.
Yes.
So yeah, I don't think I have it on my computer anymore, but yeah, when I was online a lot, doing a lot of, I mean, I still am online a lot because I am a corporate trainer, but I don't use those types of filters in that class. But when I would play, so we did a lot of online corporate shows, particularly with Jay, and they were just a really fun way to make sc the screen more interactive for an audience, is to suddenly, I don't know, appear as a giraffe, or wearing, for the Christmas ones, like I wore a Santa hat and it would snow behind me. So just fun ways to bring more to an experience, right? If we have the technology. I am pretty fast, mostly because I teach corporate online most days. And so I am at my computer screen moving things around for sure on Zoom. So
That's terrific. That's great work. And I'm sure they love you.
I mean, who knows? They go away into the ether. So
Oh, but
no
the
news is good
e-fire is
news.
here.
Say that
I'm
again.
sorry. What did you say?
Oh, I said no news is good news for me.
You've worked with some incredible improvisers. If you could pick now, not to narrow the field too much, but if you could, TJ and Dave are like married to each other in a sense. If you could be married to an improviser and perform with one, I know this is a hard question.
It is a hard question, just because, people bring different, so many people bring different things.
I thought the answer was going to be me.
Oh, yep, it was. It was. I don't know. I think maybe Jay. So I really do love two-person improv. And there is something about having a shorthand with whoever you perform with.
Yes.
And there is also, finding an improv team where you fall in love with each other is almost as hard, maybe if not harder, than finding, a romantic partner to spend your life with. Like it is just a magical gift that sometimes happens. And I would say there are teams that I have been on that I have felt connected to. I don't know that I've ever had that like magical in love. We're all gonna like Heyday. Heyday is a team that's like been together forever and ever and ever. And not only are they on a team together, they are a team outside of improv too, right? They show up for each other. And I think that's probably like Jay is probably the closest that I have to that, in the sense that we certainly have a short form. We're also trainers together. We also are human friends that are humans together. And understand each other's lives, right? So I actually married him and his wife, he and his wife. I married them. And also, they are friends with my husband and I, and we also know all of their kids. So, like, there's a connection that extends beyond improv. And to me, that's also really what improv is about creating connection that is deep, that is intimate, that is playful, that is based in joy. And yeah, so I guess that would be my answer.
I want to go back to kind of your philosophy, if I can use that big word. I always think about that. Is it from the Charlie Brown musical, My Philosophy? Oh no, is that in the Charlie Brown
I
thing?
don't know.
My Philosophy, Lucy sings it. Anyway, I love musical theater. I'm very enthralled with it, in love with it. And I don't have a great voice either, but I have 100% commitment when I do music, you know, which is
Yeah.
my thing. So let's talk about, if we can, your philosophy on improv, bringing it to the community, and what your vision is for The Misfit. And I love the title, The Misfit, the Island
Thank
of
you.
Misfit Toys. It's such a great name. So kind of your goals and your philosophy on improv and your theater.
Yeah, so I think of improv as a tool, right? So improv is a tool to connect people more effectively to each other. Some people use that tool to build a career, become a performer. Some people use that tool once because they go to one improv class and then, I don't know, they make friends, right? Some people use it as a tool to become a better public speaker, and it can be any of those things. What I think that it has given me most is that it has given me relationships. And that has been, so when I think about the purpose of an improv school, can it make the next comedic star? Sure. More importantly, though, can it connect people who wouldn't have found each other to each other? Yes. And that to me is of bigger importance. So when we think about improv at Misfit, we think about it as a tool for people to connect. Also a tool to express creatively, right? To be in pursuit. I think as humans, we like to learn, we like to grow, or at least a lot of us. And when we are able to be in that state of pursuit of learning and of growth, I think we find a lot of joy. I know that I do, and I certainly see that reflected. So we see part of our mission as connecting people to each other, and that we want to also in our shows, we want them to be as professional as possible and to be representative to the community about what improv can do for them, to bring them joy, to bring them the joy of creation. So I'm not super concerned necessarily about, churning out a touring company. If one emerged, I'm not going to be mad. And really, what I care about is, is improv giving people an outlet that they need? Is improv connecting them to other people that they wouldn't have found? And I would say already, so we our year anniversary will be June. Already that has occurred, right? So we have had
Wow.
people who have started to date. We have had people who have found friends. We have had people who found the kind of creative support that they needed to be in pursuit. And we try and do other things besides improv. So we just had Blue Ridge Pride come, and they are, an organization spreading the message of pride in the Western North Carolina area, and they came and taught a class on welcoming spaces and how to be a welcoming space to an LGBTQIA plus community. So we do stuff like that. We also try and encourage our folks to connect with each other outside of improv as well. So we do a free jam every month. We do a free improv open mic for teams. And then after class showcases, we always go out for pizza after. So we really are trying to make sure that people are getting connected to each other.
That is so beautiful. Now, we've been talking for a while, but I do want to ask you about something I read that you said, and it was about redefining the word success in the arts. If you could address that a little bit, Jillian.
Sure. Yeah. So one of the things that I think is a disservice that our current capitalist society does for artists is that it equates success with financial, like being financially viable. And I think that that puts a lot of pressure on people to make a career out of something that society actually doesn't support as a career. So it's like, it's a bit of a catch 22 that performers are put in, where we say, okay, you're only a professional improviser if you make money at it. However, there is no infrastructure at all to really support most people as professional improvisers. So for example, like the state of North Carolina, for arts, for the arts, per capita, gives about 80 cents per person to the arts. Somebody can't live off of 80 cents, right? So when we think about the way society supports artists, I don't know that America does a particularly good job of it. Are there residencies? Sure. Are there a lot of them? No. And what about residencies for artists that need other people, right? So could I do a painting residency? Sure. Could I do a poet in residence? Sure. Could I do an improviser in residence? Yes. Question mark. Often in Europe, rather than the US. So it's just the nature of the structures that we have in place. I don't know that they particularly serve art, and the idea of success being equal to monetary, some sort of monetary reality, is limited. I'm not saying it's always wrong. It's certainly limited. There are plenty of incredible improvisers I know that can't make a full-time living as an improviser, right? They have to teach, they have to run a space, they have to do other things, and even actors, right? So once upon a time, you know, studio systems supported actors. And then when that fell apart, you could have a character actor that could do like two guest stars a year and still make a livable wage, but that's not the case anymore. Much of that has been dismantled. So I think it's an impossible standard to hold people to. And it also just prevents people from viewing, well, I mean, there's, it's not, we're prevented to. And I think it puts a pressure on folks to say, well, I'm not successful because I don't make a living at this. And I think that's really unfair when we think about art. Like, success is I do it. That I do it.
Exactly. I love that. And I really just love you, Jillian. You're such a fantastic person. And I really appreciate all the time you gave me today. And of course, I'm seeing you on Saturdays in a sketch class.
So true.
You really inspired me to want to make that trip to Asheville. I have some relatives in North Carolina, and I get up there occasionally. So if you had any piece of advice for somebody that's, you know, just gotten into improv, and they, like, you know, like a lot of us, they just become passionate about it from the get-go. Mm-hmm. What kind of words of wisdom would you give them?
Yeah, I'll give them the words of wisdom I would give to myself if I were to go back in time, which is, take all the classes. You do not know too much for them. I promise you, you don't know too much for them. Take all of the classes and don't be in such a hurry, right? Like, because improv is a practice, we have to do it over and over and over and over for a long time before we really become proficient in a way that allows us ease and consistency. So if I could go back to like little baby bird me, I would be like, just chill out, man. Just chill out. It's going to work out. You just need to calm down though, right? You don't need to go to every audition, right? Get really good, really good. And then see.
Great. Beautiful. I love it. Again, thank you so much for your time.
Of course.
It's been great. And I wish you the best success as you go into the second year at the Misfit Theater in Asheville. So exciting. And see you again, Jillian. Thank you
All
for
right.
your time.
Thanks so much, Margo.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the podcast and look forward to you joining us next time on Improv Interviews with Margot Escott.